Welcome back to In the Moment Innovation. I'm Jackie Hendry, filling in this week for Kara Hetland. Mental health clinicians and Head Start teachers in southeastern South Dakota are learning to serve young children with social and emotional difficulties that can impact their development. The South Dakota Early Childhood Mental Health Collaborative is focusing on training professionals to identify and then work with children from birth to age five who can benefit from specialized curriculum and play therapy. The five-year project is led by two South Dakota State University researchers. Dr. Kristen Carrata and Dr. Stacy Bourne are assistant professors in the Department of Counseling and Human Development. They joined me from the Janine Basinger Studio on the SDSU campus in Brookings yesterday to talk about the first year of the project and what comes next. To start, Dr. Carrata outlines the program's key goals.
So this is our second year of a five-year SAMHSA-funded $2.2 million project that established the South Dakota Early Childhood Mental Health Collaborative, which is a partnership between Southeastern Behavioral Health, South Dakota State University, and also ICAP Head Start here in South Dakota. The purpose of the project broadly is to increase access to early childhood mental health services for those located in South Dakota. It's particularly important because we know that for 9.5 to 14% of children under the age of five are likely to experience emotional and behavioral disturbances. But unfortunately, we are behind in our access, particularly in South Dakota, to providing services for those early childhood developmental periods.
And is that difficulty in access a product of geography or funding? What's kind of the root of some of that difficulty?
I think it's both. First and foremost, within South Dakota, the project's focused on 14 counties in eastern South Dakota, 10 of which are designated as mental health shortage areas, and 13 have medically underserved communities. So it is a product of location, but it also has to do with funding. And we were particularly excited to see this federal funding come through because it demonstrates that there's a renewed focus on the importance of early childhood mental health.
So Dr. Bourne, I know your focus on this point is related to kind of that workforce training and with a particular focus on play therapy. For listeners who aren't familiar, can you talk a little bit about what play therapy is and how that relates to some of these emotional or behavioral disturbances for these young kids?
Absolutely. So this grant allows us the opportunity to train mental health professionals in the practice of play therapy, which uses play, which is children's natural language, to communicate and work through some of the difficulties they may be experiencing. What we know about children developmentally is not until about the ages of 11 or 12 are they able to cognitively or verbally process some of the difficulties that they experience. So play provides a natural means for them to, like I said before, work through some of those challenges in a developmentally appropriate way. And the great thing about play therapy is there's quite a bit of evidence supporting its efficacy in the treatment of many disorders, everything from social and emotional disorders, behavioral, and transitional stresses that children face. It's a natural part of childhood.
Right. So being that it's that natural, what does that training look like when it comes to educators or clinicians working with those kids?
Sure. So to become a registered play therapist, individuals need to have a master's in a mental health counseling-related field that does include psychiatric nurse practitioners to psychologists to counselors. And they need to complete an additional 150 hours in the classroom studying play therapy theory, history, and practicing the actual techniques. In addition to the 150 education hours, it also requires about 350 direct client contact hours practicing play therapy while under the supervision of a registered play therapist. So it's quite closely and carefully monitored and delivered.
Yeah. When you're looking at kind of that workforce training for these teachers, what does that look like? Kind of parsing that down for those that might not get the full master's in this, just as a way to incorporate that in their classrooms.
So in terms of the Head Start teachers, what we're focused on with them is not receiving play therapy training, but actually receiving some additional support in their implementation of social-emotional learning curriculum.
Okay.
So these are teaching important skills that are linked to resiliency with their children. And so the first year we held focus groups with 14 teachers to identify some of the barriers that they're experiencing with implementing this evidence-based curriculum in the classroom. And our second year is focused on getting them additional training in conscious discipline specifically, and also some classroom resources to help them in that, increasing their implementation. The other thing that we did with teachers is that we, with their assistance, in year one, we had them screen all of their children with a DECA P2, which is a standardized measure for evaluating within child protective factors. And the purpose of that was to identify children's strengths, but also areas in need of growth, so that once we were able to get the children screened, we were able to tailor their instruction to better serve the needs in their classroom.
Right. And when it comes to that screening, what sorts of things are you and teachers looking for?
Sure. So the screening involves three specific factors that are linked to resiliency and positive child development outcomes. Those three factors include initiative, self-regulation, and attachment.
A question I hear a lot, and I'll go ahead and pose it to you, is how do you determine what is a developmental disturbance or delay or something that requires intervention, and what is a kid growing up?
So we have a unique opportunity. The DECA allows us to be able to screen children, and being a standardized measure, it provides us with score cutoffs where it doesn't necessarily guarantee that the child has per se a developmental disturbance, but it allows us the opportunity to take a closer look at that child. And once that, if that child screens positive with the DECA, we have the opportunity to meet with teachers as well as the family to discuss any potential concerns they might have, and also offer the play therapy service at their Head Start classroom location, so children are able to receive that school-based early childhood mental health care.
And in year one, we screened, we were able, with the support of ICAP Head Start teachers, we were able to screen 200 Head Start children. And of those 200, 91 of them screened as having at least one area of need. And those areas that we're talking about, again, are the initiative, self-regulation, or attachment.
Wow. So what have you learned so far in the initial year of this program?
A lot. That's a great question. Kristen and I looked at each other with that. We've learned so much, I think, in the fact that what South Dakota was missing was really a picture of our youngest community members and what the status of their social emotional well-being really is. There's a lot of folks who have a lot of interest and excitement about improving the social emotional well-being of our very youngest community members, but having the resources as well as the opportunity to support and improve that mental health well-being for the children as well as their caregivers has been incredibly impactful. And
to add to what Stacy just said, I completely agree. I think one of the biggest things that we've accomplished within this first year is to get a closer identification of what is the actual need. We know that early childhood mental health is important. We know that there is a need for additional services, but with the screening, we're able to get a little bit more targeted numbers of not only the number of children who are in need of additional support, but also the areas in which they are in need.
Mm-hmm. And then, so what are some of the next steps now that we're through this first year? I think we touched on those a little bit, but we can go more in depth now of what comes next.
Sure. I think maybe building off of your previous question and into this one is that some of the year one activities, we are able to uncover not only what the need is, but who are the other professionals across the state who are interested in joining efforts to improve this workforce shortage. And I think that was demonstrated in October when we had 171 professionals come and learn from Dr. Robert Jason Grant about autism and neurodevelopmental disorders and how we can use play-based techniques for helping those very young children. And so we'll be able to continue to offer an annual workshop thanks to this grant where we'll have that many stakeholders, if not more, in the future coming together to learn, share ideas, network, and continue to strengthen early childhood mental health. Additionally, we'll continue to train mental health professionals in play therapy so they're able to work towards the full accreditation as a registered play therapist. We're going to offer specialized trainings in attachment-based therapies like TheraPlay, and I'll let Kristen speak to Head Start.
Sure. With Head Start, we collaborated with Head Start to help them develop a strategic plan for improving their social emotional learning in the classroom. And so we've got that strategic plan in place. And as part of that, that includes we were able to purchase with the grant a 10-session e-course for all teachers and staff at the ICAP Head Start. So they're receiving additional training to help support kids with their social emotional learning skills.
Wow. What do you hope at the end of these 5 years to accomplish? Are you looking to develop strategies? Are you looking for research to point to justify, increased funding or services? What are you looking at for your goals?
The biggest goal is to increase access for underserved populations here in South Dakota to early childhood mental health services. That's our number one goal. Aside from that, to continue to create awareness about the level of need, particularly among South Dakota children and families, but also to increase workforce training so that we're able to meet that need.
Well, I think the beauty of the five-year project and looking at early childhood mental health is that the children that we've touched in year one will be moving, into 8, 9, 10 years of age as our project winds to completion. So perhaps we'll begin to see maybe some differences in our communities, or at least, as Kristen highlighted, some increased awareness as those children move in and age into our communities, too.
Mm-hmm. And I think personally for Stacey and I, as we get these numbers will help strengthen us as we go forward and try to bring in some additional funding into South Dakota. So now we have some numbers to really back up our applications.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I wonder, are there other states that you are modeling some of these questions after? I'm kind of looking for mm-hmm. how South Dakota compares with some of these issues.
So the Surgeon General actually made early childhood mental health a priority in the early 2000s. And a lot of states got on board in terms of having state funding specifically directed for the training of their mental health and even children's services professionals. And since South Dakota was lacking in that area, it was, as Kristen said in the beginning, it was an opportunity for us to acquire funds to improve the status of children's mental health care here. That being said, Minnesota, Colorado, California are really strong champions in this regard. And thanks to our federal funding, we're able to collaborate and learn from those teams. And they learn from us as well through this process.
Speak a little more to that, if you would, about some of the interplay that comes from these other areas as you work with this grant.
Sure. So, again, because we have a federal program coordinator who works with projects across the nation, when she hears areas of need or perhaps opportunities for us to consult and network with other projects, our program coordinator is able to connect us. So if we have a specific question related to early childhood mental health consultation, she connected us with a team in Colorado, for example. And so we're able to hear about how their project got off the ground and what some of the barriers or challenges and opportunities have been as they've begun to walk across a landscape that we're just beginning to walk across as well.
Mm-hmm. And what has made, Dr. Corrado, you can speak to this, what has made the Head Start program such a fitting partner for a project like this?
Sure. So Head Start by nature focuses on low-income children and families. And what we know is that when we talk about mental health needs, those rise when we're talking about low-income communities. And so it was important for us to really target that underserved population. And I think what's unique about this partnership is that it really brings together three key stakeholders in terms of Southeastern Behavioral Health, Head Start, and South Dakota State University.
Southeastern Behavioral Health is a community mental health agency in Sioux Falls. We have 11 across the state of South Dakota, and they were well positioned to partner together with this grant and have been so eager and excited to train. Some of their clinicians actually make up one of our first play therapy cohorts funded by this grant program. So they have 8 clinicians completing the play therapy training and practicing that techniques, not only in the Head Start classrooms, but also with the child clients that they see out of that Sioux Falls office and in the schools that they serve within Sioux Falls as well. So they've been so eager and excited and have been real advocates for expanding children's mental health care.
Yeah. Kind of my ending question is, what do you want, if there are any parents of young kids listening to this segment, what do you want them to know about the work that you're doing and the ripples that you hope it has for early childhood mental health care and education in South Dakota?
Development is dynamic and it's challenging, and it's not an easy job to raise the very young people in our lives, and parenting isn't something that you have to do alone. So if you're in need of assistance, whether it's reaching out to a preschool teacher, a neighbor, or a friend, to do that and reach out, because parenting in isolation can be really challenging. And I think when we reach out and make those connections and normalize or validate and support each other, we have the opportunity to not only feel better ourselves, but also be better and more present parents too.
Dr. Carrata, do you have anything that you want to add to that statement?
Oh, I just love what Stacey just said in terms of that message, and I agree, and just also that children are resilient and that there are a number of things that we can do as a team, as educators, mental health providers, and parents to work together to support positive developmental outcomes.